We'll now call upon our brother Roger Lewis to deliver his third class entitled The Bread of the Siege.
Well, thank you, Brother Chairman, and good evening, my dear brothers and sisters in our Lord Jesus Christ and my dear young people. Our studies, of course, over these last few days, evenings actually, and one more still to come, have been what we might describe as a consideration of Ezekiel's first parables, because these were the very first things that he would set forth after he had been called and commissioned by God. And we said, did we not, that he had to be Ezekiel the exemplar because he had no choice. He was commanded on behalf of God to be dumb. So whatever he was to set forth in the context of Ezekiel chapter 4 and 5 and these very first of his parables, he could but enact them because he was not allowed to speak them until such time as God would grant him permission. And in the very enacting of them, of course, he must have aroused the greatest of curiosity concerning the onlookers of the Jewish people in the captivity, as they watched with astonishment and sometimes with puzzlement what exactly the prophet was doing. And we saw in our first study, in the story of the tile and the pen, that what Ezekiel really was doing was setting forth the drama of the coming siege against Jerusalem and just how determined God was to hold to account their profaning of his sanctuary and his altar. And then we discovered in that strange account of how the prophet lay on his side first one way and then the other, bound with bands that rendered him immobile apart from the lifting of one arm, we saw foreshadowed times that would stretch ahead, in which the nation would yet endure judgments that God intended to visit upon them until Almighty God had exacted his tribute of unmet Sabbaths, and the appointed time would finally come. And now we come to this third section in the last few verses of Ezekiel chapter 4, and we come to the matter of the overthrow of Jerusalem and the story of the bread of the siege. And so verse 9 says, the record says, "Take thou also unto thee wheat and barley and beans and lentils and millet and fitches, and put them in one vessel and make thee bread thereof." Now, of course, it was the custom in those days to bake bread generally from wheat, because wheat, of course, was considered the best grain. It made the best bread. And if you were not able to make a loaf of wheat, you might have chosen barley, especially if the season required it, because as you might know, the barley was harvested earlier than the wheat, was it not? And so at Passover time, early on in spring, they would tend to eat barley loaves rather than wheat loaves. And sometimes, perhaps, if there was a time of scarcity in one harvest or two, an inferior grain such as millet might have been used to bake loaves of bread. The fitches here, incidentally, mentioned in the Authorized Version in verse 9, I think the margin is probably correct when it says that the word, the Hebrew word kusameth, probably relates to spelt. But here's what's interesting. Multi-grain loaves? Now, they're not normal at all. Jewish people didn't bake mixed grain bread. And there was probably a reason for that, because if you come back to Leviticus chapter 19, do you remember what the law said with regard to, well, there was a certain requirement in the law, and there was a tremendous spiritual lesson behind this requirement. But in Leviticus chapter 19, and verse 19, I wonder whether we might consider from this verse that to bake mixed grain bread was probably considered the violation of the law of Moses. Because Leviticus 19, verse 19 said, "Ye shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind. Thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed. Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon thee." And so part of the requirements of the law was that matters ought to be kept separate. You weren't to mix, you weren't to mingle things. You certainly weren't to sow with mingled seed, and presumably you ought not to bake loaves with mingled seed either. It was a compromise of a divine principle. And yet here we've got clear enough in Ezekiel chapter 4 verse 9 that that's clearly what at least Ezekiel's instructed to do, is to take six different grains of seed and bake them all together. And there's no mistake, because, well, you see what Ezekiel 4 verse 9 says. He says, "Take unto thee the wheat and the barley and the beans and the lentils and the millet and the fitches, and put them in one vessel." Or as Green's literal says, "Place them in a single vessel." Oh yes, all the grains were quite definitely mixed together in the one pot. But you see, the significance was that these loaves were not ordinary bread. These were the loaves that would be eaten when under siege, because what they really were, they were famine bread. And at such a time, bread would need to be baked from any seed they could find. A little bit of this, a little bit of that, and even then there wouldn't be enough, since a single vessel, one pot, was sufficient to hold all the grains that they could find through their foraging. This is famine bread. Never to be baked under any normal conditions other than the experience that famine would bring upon them. And the verse goes on to say that thou shalt make thee bread according to the number of days that thou shalt lie upon thy side. 390 days shalt thou eat thereof. And since those days are related to the days of the siege, as verse 8 says, this bread was to be eaten as a parable of the famine and the bread that would be eaten in the siege of Jerusalem to come. It was to be the bread of affliction. And because it was the bread of siege, it wasn't just deficient in quality, it was also going to be deficient in quantity. Because verse 10 says, "And thy meat which thou shalt eat shall be by weight, 20 shekels a day from time to time shalt thou eat it." Now in times of plenty, grain was always measured. If you come back to Ruth chapter 3, you might remember that lovely occasion where such a circumstance occurred. The book of Ruth in chapter 3 tells us that when Ruth met Boaz and asked him to act the role of kinsman unto her, the record says that before she left from the place of the threshing floor, that he provided some grain for her. But this is how he did it, because Ruth 3 verse 15 says, "Also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city." Now notice the key word, he measured it, because there was an abundance. So he measured it out to her, 6 measures. And if you come to the 2nd of Kings chapter 6, you might remember a certain exhortation not so long ago in this very ecclesia by another brother who shall remain nameless but who sits on the platform, where in the 2nd of Kings chapter 6, in a time of terrible scarcity, you'll remember, it says in the 2nd of Kings 6 verse 25, "And there was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cap of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver." There were terrible, terrible conditions in the land at the time. And you remember that Elisha made this amazing prophecy in the 2nd of Kings chapter 7 verse 1. And you notice the key word. Elisha said, "Hear ye the word of Yahweh, thus saith Yahweh, tomorrow about this time shall a measure of fine flour be sold for a shekel, and 2 measures of barley for a shekel in the gate of Samaria." That was the sign of plentiful grain that it was measured. That was what was so remarkable about Elisha's prophecy on that occasion. But when we come back to Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 10, you'll notice that this grain will not be measured, because in times of scarcity, grain instead is weighed. So verse 10 says, "Thy meat which thou shalt eat shall be by weight." I don't know if this happened in Canada, but certainly in New Zealand, during World War II, the population was issued with ration tickets. Did you have the same thing over here? I see the nods of those old enough and wise enough to nod concerning what did occur in World War II. And so tickets, ration tickets, decided how much bread and butter and meat and salt and sugar per week you could have. And each family got their tickets, their ration tickets, and everything was weighed, and a weekly ration was decided on. If you handed over your tickets and you got that by weight, once it was gone, it was gone. Until it was the next time for weekly tickets, there was no more. Because it's the sign of famine conditions. And so here likewise, in biblical times, when under the famine conditions of a siege, each family calculated the grain they had by the number of people, and they carefully weighed out exactly what could be baked as bread that day. That much and no more. And when Ezekiel is instructed to weigh the bread, what he was really being asked to do was to weigh a man's survival ration. And when the captives saw Ezekiel at work with his vessel, baking these little loaves of wheat and barley and millet and spelt, they all knew what that meant. The siege of Jerusalem was going to bring a time of privation and suffering. They could tell that from his actions. That's famine bread he's making. Both as to the mixing of the seed and the tiny little quantity, weighed out carefully. And it wasn't much. See what the record says? 20 shekels. Now, the Lion Handbook of the Bible on page 104 says that one shekel equals 11 grams. So 20 shekels equals 220 grams. But the recommended daily intake for a person is approximately protein 50 grams, fat 70 grams, carbohydrates 310 grams, fiber 30 grams, sodium and sugar 92 grams, saturated fatty acids 25 grams. A total intake of 580 grams a day. 580 grams for a normal daily life. 220 grams was what Ezekiel weighed out. That's less than 40% of the normal intake for a healthy being. That's not enough to sustain life. But it was a ration. This is famine bread. And the record says at the end of the verse, "From time to time shalt thou eat it." Now that phrase sounds quite general, but actually it's not. Because if you hold your hand in Ezekiel and come to the first of Chronicles chapter 9 and verse 25, you'll find that same Hebrew expression is used, and it's rather more specific than you might first have thought. "From time to time shalt thou eat it." But in the first of Chronicles chapter 9 and verse 25, concerning the changing of the porters who guarded the gates of the sanctuary, we're told this. 1 Chronicles 9 verse 25 says, "Their brethren which were in their villages were to come after 7 days from time to time with them." And what that phrase "from time to time" really means is that it indicates a certain time in 1 week and a corresponding time in the next week, which was the point of the changeover of the porters who would guard the sanctuary. So it was a specific moment of time at the end of each week, which is when the guard changed over. One set of porters left and another set of porters arrived. So "from time to time" was rather specific. And so coming back to Ezekiel, the New International Version translates that phrase, "from time to time thou shalt eat it." It says, "to eat each day and eat it at set times." He was to weigh out by 20 shekels a day, to eat each day and eat it at set times. And I think that's exactly what it means. So the phrase tells us that having weighed out this little portion, Ezekiel was to eat his bread once each day and at the same time each day. Well, as with the bread, so with the water, because verse 11 says, "And thou shalt drink also water by measure, the sixth part of an hin from time to time shalt thou drink." So what we've got here is, well, we've got a siege ration of liquid intake. So the Lion Handbook of the Bible, again, page 106, says that one hin equals 3.66 litres. So the sixth part of an hin is 0.61 litres. So a little bit, just under two-thirds of a litre. But the recommended daily fluid intake for a female is 2 litres and for a male is 3 litres. Two-thirds of 1 litre is not enough water, not enough liquid. But it's all he had. And so again it says at the end of verse 11, "From time to time shalt thou drink." So it's every day at a specific time, you see. It's the same phrase as verse 10. So I think what we're being told, you see, is that Ezekiel was going to eat and drink this siege ration in front of the tile on which the city was depicted, which in turn was no doubt at the front of his house. And in fact, it was probably a whole sequence of things here. He probably came outside, and first of all, he was roped down on his side so he couldn't move. We don't know how long he was tied down for, but I don't believe he was tied down for 24 hours of the day. That wouldn't have been possible. But he came out, and every day there was an action whereby he was tied down, rendered immovable, and when that period of being tied to the ground was finished, he ate his bread, he drank his water, and then he returned back into his house. And those watching would quickly realize that this whole tableau was a daily enactment, and they'd come to see what happened, you see. Now, once back in his house, I dare say Ezekiel could have partaken of other food, because it wouldn't have affected the meaning of his public sign, would it? But then I'm not sure that he did. Because perhaps God sustained him despite the rigor of the diet. You might remember the story of the 1st of Kings, chapter 17, verses 3 to 6, where Elijah was sustained by bread and flesh and water at a certain brook. You might remember the story of the prophets that Obadiah hid in the 1st of Kings, chapter 18, verse 4, and fed them with bread and water in the cave. You might remember the story of Daniel and his friends in Daniel chapter 1 verses 12 to 16 where they existed on nothing other than pulse and water. God could sustain his servants if need be, even with the privation of a siege diet. So we can't be sure. But I wonder whether that is all he ate. And there's another reason for that, which we'll come to by and by. And there's something else too, because although the siege was going to be for a total of 430 days. Do you notice verse 9 that this bread he would only bake for the first 390 days? And I think the implication is that for the last 40 days, which is, by the way, the day that he changed sides, remember, he's come out every day, gone to the same place, same side, been roped down, had the same bread, comes back inside, comes back the next day, but on the day he changed to be on the south side for the first time, he didn't eat any bread. So for the last 40 days, it doesn't look like he ate any bread. The matter of the eating and the drinking had ceased. It was only for the 390 days. Now, what could that indicate to the onlookers other than that before the siege would end, that even that ration diet, minimal though it was, would be exhausted? And that the siege would end with the horror of famine. Nothing left to eat at all. And even if God in his providential mercy sustained Ezekiel, no doubt the marks of that ration diet were found upon his face and frame. And by the end of 430 days, he no doubt looked pale and drawn and gaunt as he went about his daily parable. And most remarkable of all, he never said a word. Oh, they must have been curious, don't you think? Absolutely curious as to what was going on and what was meant. But the faithful would think, the faithful would talk, the faithful would start to piece together the puzzle. And the record says in verse 12 that when he came out to eat this meal, it says, "Thou shalt eat it as barley cakes." Now, if you come back to Exodus chapter 12, we know, of course, incidentally, from John chapter 6, verses 4 and 9, that barley cakes were associated with Passover. And not surprisingly, because that's when the barley was harvested and that's when barley cakes were eaten. But it reminds us of Passover, you see. And you might remember that in Exodus chapter 12, verse 11, it says this about the eating of the barley cakes on that occasion. It says, "Thus shall ye eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." And again in verse 39 of that same chapter, Exodus 12, it says, "And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they prepared for themselves any victual." And so I wonder, brothers and sisters, that when it says eat it as barley cakes, since they weren't actually barley cakes, that what it means is that Ezekiel was to prepare and eat them in haste as they were eaten at Passover. And if so, it was a visual scene of the disorder and the urgency of the siege to come, when food would be consumed hurriedly in the uncertainty of when the next meal might come. So he came out and he would gobble this little loaf down as quickly as he could and then scuttle back into his house. Oh, it was a dramatic thing. And then he was told, verse 12, "Thou shalt bake it with dung that cometh out of man in their sight." Now, the normal way that bread was made was you made a little fire of wood, you kindled the wood, and when the ashes were still hot, the cakes were baked without an oven, sometimes on the iron pan. But the trouble was that making a fire of human dung would have made the cakes taste loathsome. But it wasn't just that they were loathsome in taste. It meant that they would be defiled. Because didn't the law say this in Deuteronomy chapter 23? And the law was quite express about this, wasn't it? The law had a rule concerning holiness in the camp. And Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 12 to 14 says, "Thou shalt have a place also without the camp, whither thou shalt go forth abroad, and thou shalt have a paddle upon thy weapon, and it shall be when thou wilt ease thyself abroad, thou shalt dig therewith, and thou shalt turn back and cover that which cometh from thee. For Yahweh thy God walketh in the midst of the camp to deliver thee, and to give up thine enemies before thee. Therefore shall thy camp be holy. He shall see no unclean thing in thee and turn away from thee." So human dung was to be buried because it was an offense to God. It was an abomination to God. It was defiled. Now, brothers and sisters, can you imagine when Ezekiel, as a priest, was given this instruction? He would have been absolutely horrified to be asked to do such a thing. Am I now to take that and to cook in it for eating? You can understand how Ezekiel must have felt when he was asked to do this. But you see, brothers and sisters, this is what the true horror of warfare and siege was like. It brought unimaginable suffering. It brought unthinkable deprivation. In the numbness of a siege, all human pretension and all human refinement was lost. In the stark reality of the moment, you ate whatever you could find and you cooked with whatever you could find. Nothing mattered but survival. You didn't care anymore. And that's what Ezekiel's being asked to portray the brutal reality of what that siege would mean. And Yahweh said, verse 13, "Even thus shall the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, whither I will drive them." Now, this parable, remember, is about the sign of the defiled bread. And those back in the land at the siege and the fall of Jerusalem were probably going to eat this very defiled bread. But notice what the prophet says in verse 13. He says that the reality of this is going to reach out to affect the exiles in Babylon. And so Rodaham says, "In like manner shall the sons of Israel eat their bread defiled among the nations." So it wasn't just those back in the city in the time of the siege that would eat such defiled bread. The reality of this punishment, of this judgment, was something that all the nation would experience, including those in the captivity. They also would be defiled by meat offered to idols, by meat baked with mixed grain, by food which was not prepared according to the law. And notice, by the way, how that promise in verse 13 corroborates the meaning of the 430 days that we looked at last night. They might have come because of past apostasy and sin, but they clearly relate to future punishment that's yet to come. And the punishment of defiled bread that was to occur in the siege of Jerusalem would be but the precursor for a much longer period of time of Gentile defilement which the nation would experience. And part of the misery of those times was to eat bread that could never, ever be properly sanctified before their God. In fact, if you come to Hosea chapter 9, we've got a very similar passage. It actually relates to the northern kingdom, but the spirit's identical, really, to what Ezekiel is prophesying here concerning those of Judah in the Babylonian captivity. In Ezekiel chapter 9, it says this in verses 3 and 4. It says, "They shall not dwell in Yahweh's land, but Ephraim," that's the northern kingdom, "they shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean things in Assyria. They shall not offer wine offerings to Yahweh, neither shall they be pleasing unto him. Their sacrifices shall be unto them as the bread of mourners. All that eat thereof shall be defiled." And it's the same word as Ezekiel chapter 4, verse 13. "For their bread, for their soul, shall not come into the house of Yahweh." Now, Young's Literal translates the second part of that verse as follows. That last bit, it says, "All that eat thereof shall be defiled, for their bread is for themselves, it doth not come into the house of Yahweh." And I think that what Hosea chapter 9, verse 4 is saying is that it was not sanctified by having the first fruits of their harvest presented at the temple, as Deuteronomy 26 required, that they would bring a basket of first fruits, remember, including the wheat and the grain, to say, "This is what God has blessed us with." And on that basis, they could enjoy the baking of their bread for the rest of that season. But in captivity, they could never so sanctify their bread before God. The basket of first fruits at the temple was not even possible. Or yes, they would eat defiled bread, all right, amidst the Gentiles and learn the misery of that, is what Ezekiel chapter 4 and verse 13 is saying. And when Ezekiel heard this, he says in verse 14, "Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, my soul hath not been polluted. For from my youth up even till now have I not eaten those things that I ought not to eat." Ezekiel, as a priest, had been raised not only to know the law, but to meticulously observe the requirements of the Levitical code. And the two things mentioned by Ezekiel, the first two things, were both matters of specific legislation in the law. He says, "I've never eaten that which was dead of itself, And I've never eaten that which had been torn in pieces. Now, if you come back to Leviticus chapter 22, we have a comment on those two matters. Leviticus chapter 22, verse 2 and verse 8 says that here was the requirement and the teaching of the law. Leviticus 22 and verse 2 says, "Speak unto Aaron and to his sons, priests, that they separate themselves from the holy things of the children of Israel, and that they profane not my holy name in those things which they hallow unto me. I am Yahweh." And then in the midst of those requirements, verse 8 says, "That which dieth of itself or is torn with beasts, he the priest shall not eat to defile himself therewith. I am Yahweh." And the reason for that is given in Leviticus chapter 17. Because if you come back to chapter 17 and verses 14 to 16, we're told why it was that those two forms of meat in particular must not pass the mouth of a priest. Leviticus 17 verse 14 says, "For it is the life of all flesh, the blood of it is for the life thereof. Therefore I said unto the children of Israel, ye shall eat the blood of no manner of flesh, for the life of all flesh is the blood thereof. Whosoever eateth it shall be cut off. And every soul that eateth that which died of itself, or that which was torn with beasts, whether it be one of your own country or a stranger, he shall both wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until even, then shall he be clean. But if he wash them not nor bathe his flesh, then he shall bear his iniquity." And of course the thing was, the law expressly prohibited priests from eating the flesh of an animal that died of itself or an animal that was torn by other beasts, because in both cases the blood had not been poured out unto death. They could not eat that flesh. It broke the law of God that the blood must be poured out of the animal. But Ezekiel refers to a third type of flesh that he also had never eaten when he says in Ezekiel 4 verse 14, "Neither came there abominable flesh into my mouth." And I think that that was a specific prohibition under the law as well. Because if you come back to Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 17, in the matter of the law of the peace offering, there was something else that was expressly noted and forbidden. Leviticus chapter 7, verses 17 and 18 says, maybe starting from verse 16, "If the sacrifice of his offering be a vow or a voluntary offering," that's a peace offering, "it shall be eaten the same day that he offereth his sacrifice, and on the morrow also the remainder of it shall be eaten. But the remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burnt with fire. And if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering be eaten at all on the third day, it shall not be accepted. Neither shall it be imputed unto him that offereth it. It shall be an abomination, and the soul that eateth of it shall bear his iniquity." And the margin says, see Ezekiel chapter 4, verse 14. And I think that's exactly what Ezekiel's referring to on this occasion. So here is the flesh of a peace offering, which although it has been properly killed and prepared for sacrifice, the blood has been poured out properly, but the time limit that God enjoined was now past, and that flesh was counted as unclean as well. So when Ezekiel says what he says in chapter 4 and verse 14, he shows his understanding of the law, but what he's really showing is the holy life that he'd been taught to live. And to a priest who was steeped in the practice of holy things and was used to eating only holy food, the idea of baking such terrible bread of defilement absolutely horrified him. And so in these words, he pleaded for the divine mercy to alleviate the terms of the parable he'd been asked to portray. And so Ezekiel 4 verse 15 says that the answer of God comes back to his servant. "Then he said unto me, Lo, I have given thee cow's dung for man's dung, and thou shalt prepare thy bread therewith. Now, the interesting thing about cow's dung is that once it's dried, it burns as clean as wood. It burns with a good flame, and it produces hot, odorless ashes which leave no taint to bake with. So God heard the cry of his servant. He asked to be spared that indignity, and God granted his request. You see, he was a priestly man who loved the law and understood the principles it was teaching about the need for a holy life with a holy mind. But the symbolism of the defiled bread still remained. And now its significance was going to be outlined. So verse 16 says that he said, "Moreover, son of man, behold, I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem." Now, I think we've already looked at this, but where does that come from? I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem. It comes from Leviticus chapter 26, from that chapter that's, in fact, the basis of Ezekiel 4 and 5. And if you come back to Leviticus 26 again, allow me just to draw your attention to the exact wording of that warning in Leviticus, because it's clearly connected to the very circumstances of the last two verses of Ezekiel chapter 4. He said, "Moreover, son of man, I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem." And what Leviticus 26 and verse 26 in fact said was, "When I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver you your bread again by..." not by measure, notice, "by weight. And ye shall eat and not be satisfied." That's the bread of the famine. That's the bread of a siege. 10 women shall bake your bread in but one oven, and the bread will be returned to you by weight. And when you eat, you won't be satisfied. And come back to Ezekiel chapter 4 now, and that's exactly what it says. "Son of man, behold, I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem. And, he says, "they shall eat bread by weight and with care, and drink water by measure and with astonishment." And so Ezekiel takes up the spirit of, or the warning to Ezekiel takes up the very message of Leviticus 26. But it also takes up the terms of verses 10 and 11. "Thy meat shall be by weight, thy drink shall be by measure." And now verse 16 says that's exactly what was to happen, that when the siege came, they would eat bread by weight and with care, and drink water by measure and with astonishment. The American Standard Version says bread by weight and with fearfulness, water by measure and in dismay. Green's Literal says bread by weight and with anxiety, water by measure and in horror. So what we've got here is the circumstances of just what the siege would look like and feel like. Bread eaten with fearfulness and anxiety, water that would be drunk in horror and dismay. Here was the calamity of Jerusalem's coming catastrophe. And the result, verse 17 says, that they may want bread and water. But that phrase, what it actually means, of course, is that both would be unavailable. So Green's Literal says, because they will lack bread and water. And it's an echo of Leviticus 26, verse 26, "Ye shall eat and not be satisfied." It won't be enough. There'll be a scarcity of it. The privations of the famine will be terrible. So much so, says the verse 17, that ye will want bread and water and be astonied one with another. The Revised Standard Version says, "Look at one another in dismay." Green's Literal says, "Each one appalled with his brother." And I think that what that's meaning is that when the end came, they would look at each other and be shocked to witness their gaunt and emaciated state. Now, come back to the 2nd of Kings chapter 25, and let me just show you how amazingly the terms of Ezekiel's parable were going to be fulfilled in the truth of the siege itself. Everything that Ezekiel did, everything that Ezekiel enacted, turned out to be exactly what happened. It was absolutely a parable and a prophecy that was true indeed. We're told in 2 Kings 25 and verse 2, it says, the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah, and on the 9th day of the 4th month, 2 Kings 25 verse 3, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. There it is. I will break the staff of bread in Jerusalem, said Ezekiel. And on the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine did prevail, and the staff of bread was broken, and there was no bread. And so when it says they will want bread and want water, that is exactly what happened. The famine came, the famine struck, and the bread was finished. And when you don't have bread, Lamentations chapter 1 tells us what people look like. And Lamentations is, of course, a lamentation about that very siege, that very famine that Ezekiel has prophesied of, because a man was there who knew what Jerusalem experienced in that day. Lamentations chapter 1, verse 11 says, all her people sigh. They seek bread. They have given their pleasant things for meat to relieve the soul. See, O Yahweh, and consider, for I am become vile. And that was the reality of the siege as far as Jeremiah was concerned. All her people sigh and they seek bread. But of course, the problem was there wasn't any bread. So coming over to chapter 4 of Lamentations, we read these words in verse 4. The child, the tongue of the sucking child, cleaveth to the roof of his mouth for thirst. The young children ask bread, and no man breaketh it unto them, because there was no bread. And the reality of all that is verse 8. Their visage is blacker than a coal. They are not known in the streets. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. It is withered. It is become like a stick. They that be slain with the sword are better than they that be slain with hunger. For these pine away, stricken through for want of the fruits of the field. The hands of the pitiful woman have sodden their own children. They were meat in the destruction of the daughter of my people. And they looked on each other, brothers and sisters, and what they saw were the skeletons of the walking dead. And they were shocked at the sight of each other. And they knew that if their brothers and sisters looked so terrible, that no doubt they must also look the same. No wonder, Ezekiel says, they will be appalled at the sight of each other. And so what these historical references show in the 2nd of Kings 25 and the book of Lamentations is that both the siege and the famine came to pass exactly as Ezekiel's parables had showed. And what Ezekiel says in conclusion in that last verse of Ezekiel chapter 4 are these words. He says, they will want bread and water and be astonied one with another, and they shall consume away for their iniquity. But that phrase, consume away for their iniquity, that comes from the book of the law, from Leviticus chapter 26. Because if you come back to Leviticus 26 again, just look at these references to see the connection of thought, which is the last word of the prophecy of Ezekiel chapter 4 concerning the bread of the siege. Leviticus chapter 26, by the way, and verse 2 is a good place to start because it gives us the connection of thought that we believe is at the basis of Ezekiel chapters 4 and 5. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. And verse 14 says, but if ye will not hearken unto me, and will not do all these commandments, and if ye shall despise my statutes, then I will do these things unto you. So what they were enjoined to do was to do two things. Keep God's Sabbath And honor and reverence his sanctuary, and those are the very two things that they didn't do. And these are the very two reasons why the divine judgments are going to be brought upon them in the days of Ezekiel. Now go on and see what this chapter goes on to say. Verse 26 says, and so it's the reference we've already looked at, Leviticus 26, verse 26 says, "When I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women shall break your bread and shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver you your bread again by weight, and ye shall eat and not be satisfied. And if ye will not for all this hearken unto me, but walk contrary, then I also will walk contrary to you in fury." And as a result of that, he says, this shall happen, verse 38, "Ye shall perish among the heathen. The land of your enemies shall eat you up, and they that are left of you shall pine away in their iniquity in your enemies' lands." That's the same word in Ezekiel 4, verse 17, when it says they will consume away for their iniquity. They will pine away in their iniquity. All this would come because they despised and defiled Yahweh's sanctuary. It comes out of Leviticus chapter 26. And that's what Ezekiel prophesied would come in this dramatic parable that he exhibited outside his house in front of the people. So how do you think Ezekiel the priest felt about all this? What was the lesson of the defiled bread? Well, one of the lessons, surely, brothers and sisters, is that God will not be approached by those who are defiled. They must be sanctified who come near him. But here's the tragedy. You see, the Jewish people were noted for their scrupulous observance of the minutiae of the law. And they would shrink from the notion of eating defiled bread. But they were perfectly content to live by the dictates of their defiled hearts and their profane thoughts and their unclean behavior and their mixed motives. They were perfectly happy to worship God with mixed grain. What God desired was a nation who understood that the daily bread of life is to be found in our daily behavior and in our daily thinking. And then we ask ourselves, is our age any different? We're called to the holiness of the truth. But we sojourn in a Gentile world which offers us the defiled bread of its music and its movies and its media. It provides the unclean food of its materialism and its narcissism. And we eat it all up. And then come to the ecclesia and profess to worship God and the beauty of holiness. Defiled bread was a symbol of a defiled way of life. And in the kingdom, people will be taught that truth. And it's the prophet Ezekiel that says they will, because Ezekiel says that my priests shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean, the defiled, and the clean. The priests will do that in the age to come, he says, Ezekiel 44, verse 23. But we, brothers and sisters, we've got to know the difference now. Give us this day our daily bread. Must become a prayer to be fed with the pure loaf of the word every day, that we might be sanctified from within. Or as Luke's gospel phrases it, give us for the day our daily bread. Only God's bread is undefiled. And that's the bread we need to partake of for daily sustenance. Well, you can imagine, brothers and sisters, can't you, what the onlookers felt when Ezekiel came out each day and he'd carefully baked and eaten this pitiable little loaf of defiled bread, the bread of the siege, until even that was finished and he ate no more. And the faithful would have watched his daily parable and they would have known that terrible things were portended in the prophet's sign. But one day, he shocked them all. And this time, his actions were so bizarre, so strange, so unusual, that no doubt they sent the watchers into a huddle of earnest and frightened conversations as to what Ezekiel could possibly have in his mind. And precisely what he did, and exactly what it meant, is, God willing, our final study tomorrow.